Hello, welcome to another episode of Unpacking Neuroqueerness. This is your host, George Muniz Guns. Today I have another special guest on the podcast, Joan, from Kaiko Fidgets. Joan and her son Kai run Kaiko Fidgets, a STEM tool company. With a variety of different STEM tools for autistics specifically. I think a lot of people can benefit from STEMming, but particularly autistics and ADHDers. So without further ado, welcome Joan.
Thanks so much for having me, George. I really appreciate the kind introduction and invitation. In fact, the older I move into life, and I apologize if this offends anyone right up front, but I just love spending time with my neurokin. I spend less and less time with those that are neurotypical these days. So thanks for the opportunity because you just feel so safe. For me, when I'm around individuals that have, that have a neurodistinct brain, it just feels so comfortable, and I'm kinder to myself in all my ramblings. So thank you.
Of course, thank you for coming on. I feel the same way. I really love speaking with other neurodivergent people, other neurokin, because it really is like there is that connection, and like you just, it feels like there's just like an energy, like we just get each other. It's easy to kind of get into the groove. Whereas with neurotypicals, it's hard. It can be really hard sometimes. Yeah.
So true. You actually have to work. It's like work to hang in. Like I often I'll often refer to it as I feel like we throw a thread to one another, not like an actual, like literal thread, but like a thread, and you just like literally within moments of meeting someone, I mostly will know if they're neurodistinct. Because I feel like we kind of, like you referred to it as energy.
And, yeah.
There's a lot more masking and kind of, that even just, when I'm around someone has an ADHD brain, like I'm autistic ADHD, but I would say probably predominant, like, well, the one that wins most is the ADHD.
Yeah.
As I've explored using a chemical support to help calm my brain, the autistic aspects of me are a little bit more dominant now. But yes, when I am with someone that has a similar, similar way of relating, it's nice because we'll interrupt each other and go all over the show, and it actually helps. Well, it certainly helps me stay with the conversation.
Yeah.
I can listen to someone talk to me and I can talk at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if it's a linear conversation, I really struggle to stay with.
Yeah. No, I can get that sometimes too. Like if I'm waiting too long to respond, it's hard because I'll think of something and I want to say it, but then I like wait too long and then I worry that I'm going to forget it or I forget it. And then I get in my head about forgetting it. So I'm like, and then I can't, and then I'm completely gone.
That's right. Whereas it's really safe when you're with somebody that's, everyone's individual, but when you're with someone who you know gets it, we can kind of be that little bit chaotic in conversation and not feel like, oh, I'm so sorry I'm interrupting.
Yeah, exactly.
I certainly am a lot kinder to myself now that I understand why I am. I always used to... like almost like people say you have to sit on your hands as a it wasn't so much my hands I had to sit on, it was my mouth.
It's unfortunate how we get conditioned to like suppress ourselves a lot, like especially with ADHD, like you were saying, like growing up and like in school and in like from an early age, how you're like You're supposed to like how like stimming is like looked down on and like hyperactivity and like talking a lot.
And people don't realize that talking, that's a really good point. Because one of the interesting things, sorry, I'm segueing a little bit, but one of the interesting things, I'm not sure if you're aware that I have an OT background. That's actually, it's actually not so much that, but it sort of helped me do a lot more, like I understand a lot more of the foundational neuro science behind why we do things. But what I find fascinating is that for a lot of us, oral stim, or, like it could be chewing, it could be grinding, it can be over talking. When you said over talking, it is actually, or vocal stimming, or it can even be, what else can it look like? A whole range of things, because our mouth is the closest moving joint to the part of the brain that drops adrenaline and cortisol. When we're in fight flight, we have really high levels of those chemicals, and the way our brain dampens them down so that we can get less fright flight and more into, being able to hear and listen, is to actually move the body, because movement drops those two chemicals. And so, and because the jaw is the closest moving joint to that part of the brain, it's actually often intuitively, even from birth, our go-to. We tend to access things in our mouth, and it also helps stabilize our core. So the mouth, it's really interesting, I find. And one of the things often, particularly, when you're ADHD, I've found I'm constantly in fight flight. Like, that's kind of my land, and over talking is and that, and chewing out to the, I'm a quite a big person, and I think I chew doobie things to like to work the jaw. And it was just so helpful when I understood why I sought was seeking them.
Yeah, no, that helps a lot, like understanding why, because like vocal stim, it's very interesting, that you mentioned about how like over talking can also be a form of stimming. And it reminded me of vocal stimming also, and that's something that I always did, like these little sounds or like phrases or whatnot that would just get stuck in my head, and I would like to repeat them over and over. And I think it took a long time. It wasn't until maybe a few years ago that I understood why, because I ended up getting diagnosed autistic at 16, but which was a long time ago, like more than 10 years ago. But even back then, I didn't know. I didn't really know. Like, no one really explained to me about stimming and about sensory overload. So it was hard for me to understand, and I think it did make me harder on myself because I believed that it was just like that stimming was just a weird thing that I did, or vocal stimming was,
And you
and
need to stop it.
yeah.
Like one of the common questions, sorry, I need to close the loop in my brain. I was just going to say, talking about the vocal and the mouth, it's not the only reason we do things, but it's one of the big drivers. Like vocal stimming, for example, can be about vibration. It can be about it can even have a part to play in OCD, or just the joy, the feeling, the sound. There's auditory components to it. So there's lots of other things. I just want to make sure that people don't feel like I was simplifying it. There's lots of reasons for a lot of different stims. And I might through the conversation today talk to a couple of them, not necessarily the whole thing. Now I've lost the train of thought. What were we? Bear
Vocal
with me.
stimming, or we were talking about oversharing or over talking.
It was something that you were saying around that, that's right. I was going to say, commonly, often I'll have parents or carers or significant others say to me, my son, he's 17, and he stims by rubbing his jaw. excessively. What would you suggest? I get lots of what would you suggest to stop it, or what would you suggest to replace it? And one of the first things I ask is, you know, because for me it's got to be person-centered. Like, is it bothering them? Is it causing injury or damage? Like, if it was, for example, with the rubbing of the jaw, if it's causing friction burns and open wounds, well, then sure, it's something that needs to be, you know, explored. Or if they feel embarrassed or socially isolated, then again, can explore. But if they're comfortable and it's not doing them any harm, it's kind of it's not a them problem, it's a you problem. I'm not that blunt, but actually I am getting blunter. I try and do it kindly, because it's not about judging them either, because we, you know what, we can only do the best we can do with what we have and know. For each other, and that's one of the things, whether sometimes even within our own community, I find that some people can be really judgmental and harsh. And you know what, we have to be kind to each other. It doesn't mean we can't help each other educate. It doesn't mean we can't challenge. Like, I last year I was on a podcast, and I used the wrong expression, and I felt like I got in trouble. And I was really grateful for the correction, and I'd never heard it said a different way, and I loved it. But yeah, it's just about being, they weren't unkind. It was my iris kicked in. They were beautiful probably about it. But I was just like, really grateful to know that I needed, and language changes too, doesn't it? We, like, you know, people referred to being autistic as Asperger's, or I have autism. Now it's I am autistic. It's person first. And it makes sense. And it's lovely. But it'll change at some point.
Yeah. No, it's true. Like, because I used to use, because, like, since I was diagnosed back in 2010, I was diagnosed with Asperger's. And then I used it because I didn't know for a long time that, like, about the history of Asperger's and, like, all the negative negativity associated with it. And then I also used to use functioning labels, because that's what people use them around me, or I was taught them. And then,
oh, absolutely.
Yeah. And then it was like only a few years ago that I started reading more about, like, you know, support needs instead of functioning labels, and then realizing that makes a lot more sense.
It does. But it's really hard to hear it or learn or grow and learn in it if somebody attacks you for it.
Yeah.
One of the things I ask everyone's, patience and extend grace in amongst the conversation if I say something that, it doesn't feel comfortable for them. It's not intentional. Yeah. I remember my son and I were invited to be on TV in Australia to talk about our harm minimization products, because one of my particular passion points is developing things that are safe for people, like safe pain. For me, that's been a journey that's personal. We have lived experience in the house. But the journey has become a lot more extensive. Apologies, I realise my inbox is probably digging your in. I'm just going to close it so that it is closed, so it's not digging. Apologies, I'm not very techy.
No worries, I don't hear anything on this end, so you're
good. Oh,
you
can't
good.
Hear?
I can't
Oh,
hear.
That's good. Yeah. Sorry, I'm just going to try and shut it down. Oh, my goodness, I don't even have to do that. Sorry, George. Okay, right. If you can't hear it, I'll stop worrying about it. We were invited to be on morning television, and to talk about our harmonization range, which was amazing. Like, it was one of those moments. I got the phone call and I honestly thought someone was playing a joke on me. It's one of the biggest morning shows in Australia. I mean, we're only tiny compared to America. It'd probably be the equivalent of going on, oh no, I'm not.
Good Morning America or something.
Yeah. Exactly. Mm-hmm. I was going to say Oprah Winfrey, but no, it wasn't really that style of show. But yeah, like Good Morning America, exactly. Cool. And do you know the thing that Kai was most nervous about? Mm-hmm. So Kai's my son. He's now 18. He was the founder of Kaiko.
Yeah.
He was most worried about saying that he had autism rather than I am autistic. He was so scared of his language and that it would upset people, and it made it very difficult. Like, it was his biggest fear, not that he'd say something silly, not that he'd freeze in his mind, not that he'd stim in a way that wasn't appropriate. Actually, there was two things. There was that and the fact that they were touching him to mic him up, because you don't think about these things, but we have sensory needs.
Yeah.
It could be really challenging. Anyway, they were beautiful and he did an amazing job. And But yeah, sorry, I diversified.
No, that's awesome. That's really great that that you were, you two were able to go on that show. I'm sure it was like a big moment. Yeah.
For the rest of our life, it will be one of those massive moments of, oh my goodness. I literally, when they called me, I thought someone's playing a trick on me. There's no way they're calling.
Yeah. So. Well, that's amazing. Wow. Yeah. So,
yeah.
You were mentioning earlier about types of stimming. And so I figured I would ask you a little bit about that. And like, because I'm sure that you've, because I know you have like different styles of, you and Kai have different styles of fidget tools as well. So I wanted to ask you a little bit about those.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And one of the things is we've explored. So I'll kind of, if it's okay, I'll give a little bit of history of how it is we're doing what we're doing, because it's sort of part of that journey.
Yeah.
So when Kai was, so my son Kai was in grade 4, he was 11, and he was using a thing which you would probably be familiar with. It's called a tangle. So it's a jointed plastic or silkeny kind of fidget that was available at the time. It was probably one of the few things that was available at that at his age, certainly here in Australia. And he was getting teased by his peers for playing with what they deemed as toy. And they were, you know, saying mean things like, you know, go play with the preps and whatnot. And so he came home in tears and I sat down with him and, you know, we cried a bit. And then we thought, well, okay, what can we find that doesn't look like a toy that you can use? And so we searched and we really couldn't find anything that was similar or going to suit his needs, because he likes things that are jointed. And so we just started, it's, you know, desperate mama / OT brain, problem solve, let's make something. And bike chain is jointed. So we Googled how to degrease bike chain and how to, and so that was the beginning of our journey. We made Kai a fidget. The first one stunk because it said to use kerosene to degrease it. I can tell you that did not smell good.
Wow.
Yeah. But, you know, we didn't stop there. We experimented using all bits and pieces of metal to come up with some options for him. And, you know, it really made a difference. And instead of being teased, his peers started asking him where he got them, not believing that he'd made them.
Mm.
And then I watched his self-esteem improve. So we lent into that and started taking him to little markets just to sell his fidgets. And literally better than any therapy, any intervention, any supports that we put in place for him. He's quite dyslexic as well, so he'd had lots and lots of early intervention. This was the first thing that actually made him feel good about himself, because everything about his social interactions, sporting interactions and academic interactions told him he sucked. Yeah. You know, he didn't nail any of those things, but yet he was bright, and beautiful, but just not similar to his peers. And so his world told him, even though his parents said, you're amazing, his therapist said, you're amazing, his world didn't feel like he was saying that. But for the first time anyway, making these pictures made him feel really good. So that's actually how it happened, quite by accident. And then when I saw, and so that's what one of the things we were talking about before, like leaning into your interests, because I could see that it was building him up. I then found a Kids in Business mentoring program to help mentor him in learning about business, because I didn't know anything. And so it grew very gently and very organically out of his special interest and my passion to support him in that. But one of the things, so now I'm not going to answer your question. It's
not a bit of a, no, this so is all good.
Obviously, initially we were making fidgets that suited his needs and his sensory preferences, which was jointed and metal and hard. And at the markets, because we were talking to people, his very first market, he sold 73 fidgets.
Wow.
You know, it was just a little craft market and they went nuts. Like it was mind-blowing. But we also heard, so I'd be with him obviously supporting him, and I'd hear people say, oh, you know, it's a bit hard, or do you have anything softer, or do you have anything that would help with picking, do you have anything that would help with, and as we heard those, do you have anything, or oh, we started to think about how we could create other designs to meet different sensory needs. And so our range grew and our interest in, you know, just organically hearing what other people liked and found helpful. Or like one of our fidgets, my best friend has struggles with a thing, or that the name they call it is trichotillomania, which is hair twirling, hair pulling, and she has ball patches, or she did have ball patches all over her head, which are constantly playing with her hair. And so I mucked around with a whole range of different things, trying to. When we have a stim, and if it's, we're finding it unhelpful, or that it's creating a situation like losing hair, or you know, infected fingernail beds, or whatever it is that's creating a situation where it's not helpful, trying to match the sensory input as close to that as possible is super helpful.
Yeah.
I find it gives you the best opportunity for success. So. For example, for hair twirling, having something higher that's accessible with a similar sensation gives you the best opportunity for replacing that behaviour successfully, because it's often not conscious. A lot of our stims, some of them are conscious and some of this we absolutely lean into. Some we don't even necessarily realise. So hard to replace. If we want to, and like again, I'm not saying we should replace our stims. I think is where if we're comfortable and they're not hurting us, it's a them problem, not a us problem. But sometimes, like for example, it might be something that we fully enjoy, but in certain situations, like say, you're in a meeting and you don't. You are conscious that it does affect your anxiety level if you are leaning into that stim. So having some tools in those moments closely wired to them but not exactly the same can really be helpful.
Yeah.
So, yeah, our range grew as we listened. And I think one of the cool things about our range, please don't leave this if it's not loud, but in some senses being an like a predominantly ADHD brain, I'm batshit crazy. Like I literally, you know what I mean? You know, like I literally don't put anything that's like risky or yeah, let's do it.
Yeah.
I have a high appetite for, I guess probably the better way of saying it is I have a really high appetite for risk. And so it just takes one person to say to me, oh, I wonder if, or I, you know, I really like something that helped with that, and I'll go off and I'll develop it. But when you develop it, like I've got a product at the moment that, luckily, it's going really, you know, like it's been really received well. It cost me $30,000 to develop the molds for before I even had one of them.
Wow!
And So we couldn't have done that at the beginning. We're sort of, you know, a few years down the track now. But even then, it took me over a year to save up and do that process of – it ended up having to be three molds. The first mold didn't work. I had to make another mold. And then there was a second product I wanted to put with it, so a third mold. So there was three molds. And but most businesses won't lean into that because it's not economically viable, or they haven't, you know, they haven't got the breadth of understanding of how popular it'll be. So they do all that, you know, that research and development, and I don't do any of that. Oh, that like kills my dopamine. I'm totally not interested. If one person can be helped, I'll go for it. If I can come up with a solution, so. You know, even like as late as like 1 o'clock last night in the morning, Kai and I were sitting talking through a particular product that we're developing, and some like tweaks to it in order to, you know, get it made. Anyway, sorry,
yeah, no, that makes. I like that you were saying about like doing it your way and just like figuring it out, because like I find that I do, like even like with this podcast, like. I feel like in the beginning, I got a lot, like, well-intentioned people around me, like, especially, like, neurotypicals. They would tell me, like, they would try to tell me how I should do it. And, like, oh, you should do this and this because that person does, because this podcaster does it this way, because you want to have, like, this and, like, that. And that would just make me more anxious, because then I was just like, well, I'm... You know, this feels like too much, like, stuff that I have to follow. It's, like, all this work. And then what I figured out is, like, when I just do it my way and I just, you know, like, I just figured it out the way I like it. And then it's, like, less stressful because then I can come up with the solutions in my head. And I feel like it's, like, I've observed that with, like, just neurodivergence in general. Like, you... because we typically don't, like, the way that most people do it doesn't really match for us. Like, we create our own ways and our own strategies. So that's something that I really like about,
I love that. That is so good. You should be proud sounds patronizing. That's not how I'm trying to, sometimes I have trouble finding words. You should, like, it's amazing that you're leaning into that and you recognize that, because I think a lot of us spend a lot of our lives not being kind to ourselves or trying to fit in with what other people want, or trying to, like, it's not that we can't listen to other people or honor what they're saying, but we have to find our own way.
Yeah, no, it's true. And because, like, sometimes it's, there'll be something that someone says that, like, I'll be able to take something from it and make, like, some things make sense and I can incorporate that. But it's like, usually if they're trying to get me to follow, like, a certain mold, then it doesn't work. I have to, like, make it my own.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the other thing, and not always, and this might not sit with some, but I don't know. I find that, and I can only talk from my own experience, yeah? So it takes a lot to show up some days.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of days for us.
Yeah.
You know, it's exhausting. There's, like, it's the sensitivity dial is one way I kind of look at it for myself, is dialed up. And so everything can just take – so, like – when we front up to do something, because you're not doing this for your own benefit, you're actually, like, it's amazing. Like, I admire what you do to pull a podcast together, because there's a lot, not just the talking. That's kind of the beautiful, can be, like, the beautiful part of it. There's so much more to it. So, and you give a lot of yourself to do that. Yeah. And you have to push past a lot of things to do that. So, like, you know, don't ever forget that it's an incredible gift that you're giving others to show up, and that it does take work.
Thank you. Yeah, no, it's true, 'cause like I feel like a lot of people, they just think that it's easy. They think that you just come on and you talk, but there's like so much more. There's like planning everything, and then the actual recording, and then you have like sometimes you have editing and just like naming and the description and all of that. And yeah, but it is the really rewarding thing of it is that I know it's having an impact. Like you said, it's having an impact on people. It's interesting how originally the goal was more to educate neurotypicals. And then it kind of became It became, I noticed that it was really helpful for other neurodivergent people, just like learning to better understand and better accept themselves too.
Oh,
Yeah.
100%. One of the, like, I was late identified. It was so interesting. Another beautiful person I met through Maisie, who introduced us, was at Carol. Have you met
Carol
Carol G?
Jean, yeah.
Oh yeah. I met her, and when I she was the very first person, even over my husband, that I actually let know that I'd just been told that I was autistic ADHD, and she's like, "Oh yeah, like totally knew that." I missed it. I missed it. So I was late identified. But just that kindness, and for me, I seek out material that it's just validating, because we feel broken a lot of the time internally, because the world shows us. Well, I kind of, again, I'm struggling with language around that, but this, yeah, our lens can feel broken. Like, well, we can feel broken.
The
Not
world,
just,
it
yeah.
we it's easy to feel broken and out of place when it's like a lot of times because there's so like little understanding about how our brains work differently and everything. I feel like we're made to feel a lot of times that that we're like broken or wrong or weird. Like I felt like that a lot, and I have to kind of, I mean, that's another great thing about being like talking more with other neurokin, like you mentioned earlier, because like that reminds me that I'm not broken or weird. Because like if I even like the neurotypical friends and family of mine that do understand me to a level and that they do try to help, and I feel like they still don't fully understand my experience. And there's certain things, if I go to them and try to vent about something, I'm not gonna get that same kind of validation.
100%. But the interesting thing that we need to remember is we don't get them either.
Yeah, exactly. They don't, they forget. And I think someone told me this, like when I was much younger, and I think I probably didn't even know I was autistic yet. And the someone said like, "Oh, you're weird, or you seem weird." And then I said to them, "You seem weird. You're confusing."
The internal chatter in my head sometimes when I'm talking to someone that's just not wired like me. It's like, what the actual? Or just even, like, I just try and be curious. But yeah, sometimes you're like, because we don't, we, like, it's just different. Oh, I heard an analogy, and I love it. I love it for myself. And again, I probably sound sensitive, but I'm just really conscious that, language matters. So I don't, yeah, but I love this analogy for me. It reminds me when I'm getting critical of myself that and they compared it to, and an analogy is just a simple way of viewing it. It's obviously not, a fully encompassing and reflective, but that, you have Apple phones and you have, is it Android? Is that the other word? Or
Android,
Samsung?
yeah, there's BlackBerry. I guess BlackBerry was
Or Samsung. Anyway, there's two operating systems. There's Apple's and there's not apples. And our brains are a bit like that. Like, it's, again, like, no, not that simple, but some people have Apple operating systems and some people have Android operating systems. And it's not that, I mean, some people think Apples are better and some people think Androids are better. It's not that, it's just that they're different.
They're just different, exactly.
They're different.
Mm-hmm.
And that's beautiful. So I mean, I don't know that I'll ever see in my lifetime, but I don't see it as being the operating systems as being a disability. I really struggle with that language. Like, I hate think words like rejection, sensitivity, disappointment, or even, you know, ADHD, dysfunction at the end of it, or
the disorder, right?
Yeah. I don't like that language at all, because I don't see it as that. Do we experience fragmentation and difficulty and barriers and support needs? Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is stripping away some of those words or some of those frameworks or people's understanding, then potentially puts us in a situation where people say, well, then you don't need accommodations or you don't need. But it's no different to, I'm trying to use a phone, but I'm not very techie. There'd be an analogy in there. But, you know, we need to do hard resets and we need to, you know, there's ways you interact with apps on the different platforms, I'm sure.
But yeah, no, I agree that the, I also don't like the word disorder. I think it should be changed. There was one time I was thinking about, like, a different name for ADHD, and I think I came up with attention hyperactivity regulation differences.
Oh, I like that. I'm gonna write that down.
Sure.
I like it. Sorry.
Sure. No. It's
attention. Say that again.
Attention hyperactivity regulation differences.
I love that.
Because I think it's just like, it really encompasses, like, the core of what it is, like, the difference in regulation of, like, having too much or having too little, but, like, how it swings, how it's more of a swing. Because when they say hyper, like, deficit, attention deficit, it implies that it's only a deficit, that it's always down. But no, it can be way up sometimes.
I was going to say, and it's quite the opposite.
Yeah, and then, like, the word disorder, too, is, like, but it makes it sound like you're wrong or broken. And it's not to say that, like you said, it's not to say that it can't be disabling sometimes for certain things, like executive functioning, but it's just not, it doesn't have to be called disorder, because...
No.
Because then it implies that it's wrong, and it's not. It just is.
It's not. It's different.
It's what it is. It's just
different.
Yeah.
I can't remember what it was. Have you ever listened to Connor DeWolf? I watch his. Write his name down. Connor. Connor.
Mm-hmm.
D-E Wolf with an E on the end. And he's American, I think, or maybe Canadian. Young lad, he looks like he's in his 20s. He talks about uni.
Yeah.
But he just does short little skits around ADHD. He's got a really good one around ADHD, a new version of what those 3-4 letters stand for, which I can't remember what they are. Thanks to ADHD, it's not in my brain. I think it's it can be and at least if we talk about it, but quite frankly, neuronormative or neurotypical ways of thinking can be unhelpful.
Yeah, no, definitely. Like, it still drives me nuts how the non-direct communication, like little hints, like there's a phrase but it doesn't mean what it means and you have to kind of decipher like that.
Nuances,
like
the inferred, you know, when they're inferring something, but it's not, yeah, like just yeah. Saying, like,
just because, like, they pay a lot of, I've noticed that they pay a lot of attention on the tone, Like, oh, like you'll ask them, you'll ask a neurotypical person, oh, do you want me to take out the trash? And they're like, no, it's all right. But they're saying it in this way, like it feels like you're supposed to, like, oh no, it's not really all right. And I'm kind of trying to hint that you should do it, but they're saying, no, it's all right. So I'm gonna understand, no, it's all right. And then they're like upset at you because you didn't understand that. And
Totally agree. It just
it,
gives it.
yeah, it, no, it because it can go the other way too. Like they'll expect, like because they're so used to talking that way, they'll like take something that you say literally, and you mean what you say, like but they'll try to find a hidden meaning, and then they'll say, oh, you're being sneaky or whatever because they can't find the hidden meaning. But the thing is, there's no hidden meaning. I'm just saying it as it is.
Literally, that's what I mean. Yes, I don't know which bit is confusing about that. Yeah, no. Whereas, I think we can, particularly like as neurodistinct individuals talking to each other, we can get it wrong with each other too, for sure. But we get the need for clarification. I recently had a beautiful person start with us in the business. It's our first full-time staff member. We've got lots of people that work with us casually, but our first full-time, and they are neurodistinct. And I love it because if I say something, they just ask me a really direct question back to clarify. And I love it because there's that really open, clear communication, and there's sort of no. And I'm enjoying that aspect of having that as somebody who's, training and, showing them the ropes in our business.
Yeah, no, definitely. Like, I really love that about just like being able to like not just ask things directly, but then receive, like when people are comfortable, or when they just ask me things directly too, and like, and then I know exactly what they're asking, and I can give them the best answer based on that. Instead of trying to like play all these mind games of like, oh, what are they really trying to say? What's like, there's this whole translation that has to go on sometimes.
Oh, 100%.
I wanted to ask just some of like the best. I know we have a few minutes. Because I know you have another appointment soon, but I wanted to ask you what were some of like the best things so far about your journey, you and Kai's journey with Kaiko Fidgets, and some of the more some of the things that you struggled more, like in general.
I think the highlights, probably my absolute number one, has been watching Kai's mental health and sense of self go from feeling very broken into understanding that there are no limits. Like he gets to define success for him in his world, and it's not defined by the education system. It's not defined by what therapists or adults or peers say to or not to. And also having, and when I say noise, I don't mean literal noise, so much noise of positivity around him about his impact in the world because of the tools that he's brought to other people. I literally am so grateful and thankful every day for that absolute outpouring of support and encouragement to him, because as humans we need that, we all need that. And so just by accident we found, or like by just by leaning into interest, we found this beautiful endless well of encouragement for Kai and, you know, also us. And if you ask Kai this question, and I would also agree it's probably my number two, very close, is in the quietness of interpersonal connections and emails and, you know, face-to-face and all sorts of ways. And, off, you know, like I just share the tip of the iceberg and, you know, only a little bit of it, but the one-on-one reflections and impact in people's lives, literally some of them, even just thinking about it, I haven't even articulated them and I'm getting goosebumps on my arms. The privilege to be in the messy stuff with people. People talk to me about really challenging things, self-harm. Can be things like fecal smearing. It can be violence within the home because of dysregulation. It can be there's so many things that we feel ashamed about, and it's a privilege to be able to sit with people, listen, and try and come up with solutions that can support them in that. Which, yeah, it's just amazing. So I guess getting to front up and be in people's spaces and be a safe place for people to do that, and is, yeah, probably up there with one of my amazing, like, it's a privilege. And being able to develop tools, like, it's our business. We don't have to ask permission to make something. We don't have to ask permission or go through a process of approval or none of that. We just, we if we want to do it, we do it. And if it mucks up, does it muck up? A lot of the time. Mm-hmm. The other beautiful thing about the way my brain's wired is that I don't look in the rearview vision too much. I just like, okay, that didn't work. What do I learn from it? Let's do it differently. And I go, keep on going.
Yeah.
So for me, yeah, they're probably the highlights. In answer to the question about what we found the most difficult, is a couple of things. They're probably all a bit similar. Is because as the business has grown, and again, it kind of organically happened and got quite big, you're kind of in the public eye. And so there's some pretty impressively unkind humans that love to say, and sitting with that is hard, you know. So Kai has managed that. Like early in the beginning, for Kai, really early on in the piece in our inbox, because Kai was talking about his business as he was like one of the things that he was, you know, as he was sort of, he was only, you know, 12, 13. And I'd always be with him and I moderated the inbox. But someone tried to groom him. Like online. It was horrible. But luckily he only ever saw what I saw first, if that made sense.
Mm-hmm.
But that then sent him off grid. So he has never, ever once commented on or had an inbox himself personally. It always is me. So if anyone's messaging, even if they think they're messaging God, it's me first.
Mm-hmm. I see, yeah.
And he's just turned 18. And he's like, Mom, I don't know, thank you, because it felt very unsafe for him. And I didn't show him what that person had said, but I talked to him about it because we've got to educate around safety and particularly with social media. And for me personally, a bit similarly, it's some of those unkind words or when someone attacks you for getting something wrong. Like, I don't get things wrong daily. Mm-hmm. Like, forget even with the business, with my own family, with, you know, myself, you know.
Yeah.
But I front up, I try,
mm-hmm.
and I'll apologise when I see that I've made a mistake. You know, or if someone lets me know, I'll absolutely. So people can be unkind and people can be vicious too.
Yeah.
And someone, apologies if this triggers you, but on one of my posts, and I've been off grid, so, you know, a lot of people won't have seen me recently on socials commenting, because someone said to me, just what I need, some fat, ungroomed, 50-something-year-old woman peddling something they found on Temu and rebranded. Now, Some of that's true. I am overweight and I wasn't wearing makeup, but it didn't need to be said like that. It wasn't even relevant, you know.
No, it's not relevant.
I know he's not a nice person, and so, you know, it's not that I then felt those things. And also, but the other thing that upset me the most was that he was saying that we were buying stuff on Temu. I'm like, we make it in-house.
We make it in-house, yeah.
Like, literally. That upset me more than anything. But, yeah, so that is hard. And I wouldn't say hard, but it can sometimes be tricky. Managing balance in our world. I would get over 500 emails a day, and I probably get over 30 of people asking for help. And I'm not very good at saying no, and I'm not very good at sitting with. So I'll work till 2 or 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, and I'm burnt out, tapped out, done. In general at the moment, because I've not been good at establishing boundaries. So yeah, probably for me is, you know, the unkind boundaries as well. The unkindness and the lack of my own personal. So I'm trying to learn that a bit better now.
No, I can certainly relate to both of those things. I found like it can be really discouraging, like with the negative comments, like in the same way that it's like it feels really good when someone sends you something positive and like how you've impacted them. It's just really frustrating when you see people comment something just as an attack, just to be mean, and it's not even like they're, like they have something relevant to say, that it's like a valid, it's not even like that it's a helpful criticism, it's just like a pure attack. Yes. And that can be really hard. I've definitely experienced that as well. I did videos on TikTok for a while, and I ended up just sticking mostly to podcasting because I've discovered that the TikTok world is very, there's a lot of hate that goes on there. There's a lot of like trolling. And I figured out that it's also the algorithm sometimes. I've discovered that they'll sometimes intentionally show you things that will trigger you. Yeah, like they'll show you like a comment on something that'll get you really upset. And then, because this happened to me once, and like this other autistic person had posted something and they were getting some like mean comments, and I it would show up on my feed, and I would go and I would argue with some of the commentators, and then they would start showing up like on my page, like they would get suggested my videos because the platform figured out that we bicker and they want more engagement. And so they would show our posts to each other, and then it would just,
It is tricky. And the thing is, what I now understand about the way I work is, you know, I might have 1,000 beautiful comments and I get one mean one, but it's the big one that I hook on to.
Yeah, so me too.
That's a journey for me to unpack.
Me too, yeah. No, that's true.
It really is. People can cast out whatever they like in life. It's what we do with it that actually counts. So just trying to remind myself of that and be kinder. But when we're a justice, like So like people just said, with that guy, his name was Otten, I remember. It'll be burnt in my brain forever, Otten.
Yeah.
You know, he moves on, and I could have just deleted his post, but a little bit of humour in me was, you know, I'm not deleting it because he's the one that looks like, you know, a horrible human, not me. And I did let him know that because he commented on my post that he would see more of them. You're welcome, Otten.
Yeah, you're welcome, Otten.
I said, you're welcome. We'll get to see you more.
Another thing, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, I think that's the thing that people, but even with, you know, one of the things I would encourage people to do is just think about how you deliver things. And because when you're delivering things in words on like an email or on a comment, and that's one of the things that we can sometimes, you know, not necessarily nail as humans in general. Just think about language and because the personal, there's a person on the other end. You know, when people generally are really nice, it's like, sometimes our products fail. Sometimes there'll be a problem or something. You know, like we're really obsessive about checking things, so not very often. But if there is an issue or we accidentally send the wrong thing, if you just let us know, we'll fix it really quickly.
Yeah.
But if you're mean about it, like I, Christmas Day, I had a number of, not many, but like a, we did this advent calendar. It was a cheap, like we had some really good products in it. And we had to have some cheap and cheerful stuff in it so that it was a good price point. I would have got dozens of emails telling me that I'd wrecked their child's Christmas Day because one of the things in their advent calendar had broken. And like it was a, you know, like a 50-cent little thing, but there was all these tools. There would have been more than half the tools were non-breaking. But in order to make it the price point it was, there was a bit of a blend and we wrote that on the description and, but yeah, being told that I'm wrecking someone's world because of it, or you know, lashing out in an unkind way, really impacts the person receiving it. So you know, my encouragement to everyone listening is just be kind in how you use, and you'll get a lot further.
Yeah, no, it's true. Like, even if someone is wrong or something, or they did say something, like you said earlier, the way you correct them can make a big difference, because if you're just being very aggressive, then it's just gonna come across as aggressiveness and they're gonna get more defensive. But if you're more like calm and open, it goes a different way. And like for me too, like if I did something wrong, it makes a big difference how people tell me about it. And like I've noticed that when they're gentle, it's just, it has such a different impact, because they might be wrong, but if they said, I mean, they might be right, but if they said that in a more aggressive way, I'm not even going to think about what they said. I'm just going to be really, feel really attacked. Yeah.
100%. Yeah. And look, it's not easy, and I don't always get it right either, you know, especially with my kids, my goodness. The people closest to us, we can sometimes be, you know, our guard, or we're not on point. But yeah, it's so interesting, human nature.
Yeah, it is. I feel like being autistic and like having to like think a lot about, you know, just like interactions and like the fact also like I'll play interactions over in my head a lot and all that of stuff. It always makes me
forever that one conversation. Yeah,
like I'll be thinking about it at night and like the next day, and then it makes me a lot. I think it makes a lot of us very interested in psychology in general, and just like understanding more of like, but why did they say that? But what do they mean? But what's going through their head? And like, I think it's also wanting to understand like everything. And there's a little bit of that comes into it too. Like, just like being really curious about all these internal processes that I think sometimes for neurotypicals, they just kind of, it's just part of the process and they don't think about it. But I really like breaking it down.
Oh, same. My hyper interest this week, really random, totally off sensory. Well, no, it's actually not off sensory. It's completely on sensory. My dad, who lives next door to us, got some fresh oysters in. And when I was younger, I used to be able to eat them. Now it's like, ick, I can't even, you know, like, I have safe foods, and then all of a sudden a safe food or something I can't eat, all of a sudden I can never eat again, like all the rest of the stuff. But anyway, that's not my point. I was pondering, what made someone put an oyster in their mouth, the very first person to put one in their mouth? I mean, or any food in particular. Like I'm talking, you know, at the start of time, someone opened this weird looking shell and saw this slimy thing that smells a bit fishy and went, I'm making that a clue. And so my interest this week has been like trying to unpack in my brain, like why would someone do it? Is it because they weren't going to survive and they had to eat it because there was no food? Or like were they just edgy risk takers? Or because at some point, like we understand what is and isn't okay in safety, like we're in a season in life or the world that we have so much information at our disposal, but there was a time that they didn't. And I've had like, so that's been my little hyper interest this week is thinking of that. But we do, like, really, most people would just eat an oyster and get on with it, but no, I have not.
No, because like you catch yourself thinking like, oh, but I want to understand. I want to understand why and how and where. Wow, awesome.
And on sensory foods and stuff, one of the a really helpful thing I found, because both my boys struggle with certain foods, and it's something I like to share because it's helpful, is understanding that, and again, it was an analogy. Someone said to me once, you know, if you're putting something in, if you were at a dinner party and someone served you raw chicken on a plate, well, like, what would you do? And, you know, of course, the answer is I would not eat it. Like, there's nothing that anyone could get me to do to put that raw chicken in my mouth. Nothing. And they said, when your child or when a person is with you and they're saying, no, I can't eat that, it's raw chicken to them. It's their raw chicken. And from that moment on, I have never, ever, ever worried. I have not pressured them, not that I really did then either, but I have not put it on myself either. I haven't felt responsible or that I need to stretch them, or I'm like, you know what? It's raw chicken to them. And if one day it's not raw chicken to them, awesome. They'll make that decision. But if they don't, that's okay.
No, I think that's really important, and that's one of the things that I think is still not understood enough by a lot of people outside of the neurodivergent community is the food sensitivities and how it really is like it's like you're eating raw chicken, or it's like you literally the body cannot like sometimes texture wise too.
No. It's a sensory palate. That's why I tell my kids you've got a sensory palate. And I like it, yeah, you're, like it's literally every part of your body rejects it. And the other one that I, you know, if anyone has any questions or, you know, wants to, there is a couple of little blogs on my website to talk about it, but just understanding if I could just make sure that people know that pain is like a whole range of things is a really validating or valid sensory modality to seek, and that many of us do seek pain, and it can be like picking, biting, cutting, all sorts of things. It can look like hair pulling, eyelash pulling. There's lots of things that we seek that give us, or cold. Cold is in the same family, so a lot of us like things to be really cold.
Oh, that's a lot of sense.
And that that's a valid sensory input, and finding safe alternatives that can help support us in those needs. And we've sort of got lots of tools now that we have developed to give really safe ouch and impressive ouch. And you don't have to be a self-harmer to find it very helpful. I regularly have somebody I'll demonstrate it to. They might have someone in their world that is struggling with self-harm, and I'll demonstrate the tools on them, and they're like, oh, actually, that I like that, or that scratches my brain, or that feels good. And it's because pain is helpful, and there's a reason. There's reasons why. It's not about fixing it. It's about making sure we have safe pain options. And cold is another one in the same family, and chewing gum is another one that's really helpful in a sensory because it's if you tolerate it, crunchy foods or chewing gum are readily accessible, even if you don't have your support. So I just want people to know that it's a really good one just to have front of mind that these are. So a lot of people will say to me, "Oh, is that why I chew gum, or is that why I, you know,
Like
eat
the cold.
crunchy carrots all the time?"
Because, like,
And
that you
there's a
just
reason.
made me think of my dad, because he also has ADHD, and I've noticed, like, He's always, I think he likes cold weather, and it would be like he'll go out on a cold day without a sweater, and people would always be so alarmed by it and like, oh my God, you don't have a sweater on. Why don't you have a sweater on? It's so cold. And it would like make people uncomfortable sometimes. But then I came to like, it makes so much sense now that you mentioned that the cold, like seeking cold, can be a sensory thing too.
Absolutely. Very common. Super common. More common. It's interesting. I almost feel like I don't like super cold. And I almost feel not, yeah, like that's unusual for a neurodistinct person to not. Kai runs his section of the house at 16 degrees. I don't know what that converts over there, but cold, really cold. Yeah, because so we often put our metal fidgets in the fridge, and he'll use those straight from fridge. All, there's all sorts of, but yeah, but just cold, pain, high sensory input. It's sort of in a similar family. You'll find a lot of neurodistinct people, or those with that are struggling with anxiousness. We like, not that I actually I don't have any, but like to tattoo because it's calming. I was talking to someone the other day, and they were actually tattooed up to their neck, mouth. They had a lot of facial tattoos, and they said they almost fall asleep when they're getting tattooed. And when they're overwhelmed, that's often when they'll go and seek more tattoos. And well, at some point, they'll run out of body. So again, I was talking to them about having tools that give them that same input without having to. It's not that the tattooing's a problem, it's just that at some point they will run out of body. So it's a finite landscape.
Wow, this has been a really great interview.
So welcome.
I just wanted to before we close, I wanted to thank you again for coming on. I will be linking the I'll be putting the link for Kaiko Fidgets in the description so everyone can check that out. And thank you again for coming on. I really enjoyed talking with you today, and hopefully we'll stay connected like through the
I'd love
online.
that.
Awesome.
Really love that. And thank you, George. It was a privilege to be asked, and an absolute delight to meet you and connect.
You too.
Thank you.
Thanks. All right. Thank you, everyone, for listening. I'll see you next time. And oh gosh, I forgot the other thing I always say. Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode, and I'll see you next time.